everybody. I'd like to welcome you to episode 6 of the Established Facts. We are going to continue our alignment series. And on last episode, we established to be good or not. The choice is yours. We are going to go around the table and let everyone introduce themselves. We are running kind of thin this evening, but we are going to go starting with my left this evening and let everyone introduce themselves.
Anton.
Josh.
Big Don.
And as always, I'm the host. I'm Mike. Tonight, we are going to do our spotlight. We're going to kick it right off. The spotlight this evening is coming from Josh. He is going to be talking about lawful neutral. Last episode, Don touched on lawful good, and we are going to continue our track down the alignments. And so, Josh, take it away with lawful neutral.
As made famous by Judge Dredd, I am the law. That's probably the best way to explain lawful neutral, probably of all the ones. They focus on pure logic, on pure law, both of the land, maybe their own code, as Don was explaining in the last episode. And they take really nothing to heart in their decision making, as it may be, because if it's not logical, if it's not lawful as it may be, if it does not go with the running order, then it cannot be the case. It cannot continue forward. I made the mention of Judge Dredd. Many have seen the movie, many have not. If you have not, don't worry, you haven't missed that much, but understand the I am the law is the funniest comment probably the entire thing, but it does explain lawful neutral. Nothing really matters except whether or not you've broken the law. The lawful neutral character is always considered the judge, the person that will make the decision. As I said, that's what Judge Dredd was positioned to do. That was his job. He would make the decision based off the evidence, and that would be it. That was the end of it. Now, granted, that was an extreme measure. Other characters that have been brought up, it's been brought to my attention that even James Bond could be considered a lawful neutral character because he does follow within the law of the British government. But he's doing it as more of his job and for his own benefit. But again, his decisions are going to come down to, you know, is it going to get the job done? And am I okay with it? Not that it really matters if it's good, if it's evil, just am I okay with it? It's almost a selfish alignment to some, but they don't want it to be, from what I can tell. I'd even consider Ambassador Spock for your new Star Trek watchers, whatever that may be. The entire Vulcan Empire is almost lawful neutral in racial ability, as it may be. They make every decision they can off of logic and off of the law. Spock became one of those interesting people that during the first, you know, couple seasons of the original Star Trek series, he was that, right? It was the first, but it was during the first couple ones. Don, you looking at me like that for during the first couple ones, he was almost purely logic, but he would then evolve over the course of the original series and into the movies to become maybe more of a different nature, different alignment from there. He would grow up, I guess you could say, and get in touch with his half-human side. It's the definition of what your lawyers and what your judges should be. So, just because they aren't always, I think it should be the goal for any lawyer, any judge as it may be, to try and follow the law. We all know that things come into play. Feelings may come into play, but your lawful neutral characters will take and try and remove feelings and make it purely off the law and off their own logic.
That all you got over there?
That's the best I can come up with on this one. It's kind of a tough, a lot of the neutral ones are going to be tough for people to talk about. Lawful neutral was one of them as well. you can understand law, but the neutrality is always hard. You're walking the fence, as we've made the joke about in multiple episodes now. So
would you agree in saying that lawful neutral and lawful good, seems to have, those are the two that we've talked about. We're talking about the lawful spectrum of things, and those are the two. Those are the things that tie those two together. You have a code of laws that you're following, correct? And Don, you talked about lawful good last week, and Don, you talked about, or Josh, you talked about lawful neutral today. So if the code of the law is, let's say, the same, and you guys are playing a character, and you live in the same land under the same king, and you have the same code of laws, Josh, where's the difference in the character?
I'd say the difference comes down to the emotion, as I think I made the best mention I could to with the Vulcans, as it may be. It's attempting to remove emotion from the decision-making. Other people may think different about it, but going the most logical course will separate a lawful neutral character from a lawful good character. Lawful good may intend to go for the greater good, as it may be, within the boundaries of the law. Whereas a neutral character, a person that truly may not have done a certain crime, if the prosecution may be able to prove and provide enough evidence that he's broken the law and nothing can counteract it, a lawful neutral character will most likely take that and say, well, you're guilty.
So, Don, you are traveling in this party, and you have this lawful neutral judge that has just found some evidence that this guy is obviously guilty, and you are playing the lawful good character in the group. How do you respond to the same situation that our Judge Dredd has just found himself?
Well, I think, honestly, the biggest difference between a lawful neutral character and a lawful good character, though they are bonded by that law, the first thing a lawful good character, I feel like, at least if I, from all the ones that I have actually played, the experience that I have had, a lawful good character, a lot of times, they're going to try and see good in their fellow characters or in the people that they are around, and they're going to try and do everything they can to help that person. Now, a lawful neutral character, and actually based off of what Josh said with the Judge Dredd quote, "I am the law," he also calls himself the judge, jury, and the executioner, and a lawful good character is never going to put themselves into the position of being that person's judge, that person's jury, or the deciding factor of what happens to them, and especially not their executioner. Normally, a lawful good character is going to be more of like the policeman. They're going to be the one who's going to recognize that you've broken the law, and they're going to try and apprehend you. And, you know, if there's not a situation where the offense that someone has made against the law can necessarily be prosecuted, if it's just something like you're looting a dead body, typically a lawful good character does not really like when other party members loot a dead body, because you are essentially defiling someone else's corpse. You know, there may be extreme situations where things are different, but typically, you know, it's one of those things where, and I think a lot of people joke about it, where you kind of have to trick the lawful good character into, oh, look, that person is injured, why don't you go and aid them? And then, you know, while their back is turned, you're over there looting the body and things, because, you know, that's not something that a lawful good character is necessarily going to want you to do or do in general. So I feel like that's really where lawful good and lawful neutral kind of fall away from each other, is because a lawful neutral character, they are going to want to exact that law and do everything in the process from beginning to end of that law. Now, some people may think that makes them inherently evil, because if their offense, you know, is something that would be considered an offense that you would seek like a death penalty in or something like that, maybe they have to be the executioner. That's not what it always means. You know, you can have someone go through the actual process of a trial, but but as a neutral, a lawful neutral character, typically you are the one who is going to be, you know, bringing forth all of the evidence and saying, this is what this person has done, and you are their key, kind of their key offender. So.
Awesome. Well, I hope that helps explain the difference between lawful good and lawful neutral. On our versus topic for this evening, we're going to be talking about two different styles or game systems that are used in very popular and very fundamental role-playing games. There is the D20 system, which, as alludes by its name, uses the D20 as its core dice. And then there is the alternative of the roll and keep system. And this is where you're going to roll whatever type of die they're deeming that you use. And you have to accumulate a number on a certain number of dice. Like if you're throwing 10 dice and you have to get a 20 out of 10 dice, that's how it works. You throw a certain number of dice, you keep a certain number of dice, and you have to get a certain number. We're going to talk about this and the pros and the cons and the different systems that use this and what this brings to the table as far as role-playing and gaming. We're going to go around the table and express how we feel one way or the other, whether we're a D20 guy, whether we're a roll-and-keep guy. And we're going to start over here with Anton.
For me, it's got to be probably the D20 system more than the roll-and-keep, just because I've played it longer, and I understand it a lot more, and when I got the couple games that I have played in with Roll and Keep, it's hard to figure out, especially when you're generating a character, it's hard to figure out what you roll and what you keep, and when things shift, the roll and keeps, and it just makes things a little more confusing for at least first-time players, and especially anybody who's come from the D20 system. So for me, it's got to be D20.
Josh.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. I actually have to agree with Anton on this one.
Shocking,
be the
right?
End of the world. But the D20 system is just something, for at least for me, has always made a little more sense, I think. And maybe it's just because I've played it more, but overall, I think I enjoy the D20 system better.
Big Don.
I would have to say that though I do enjoy the roll and keep system, I really like the simplicity of a D20 system, especially depending on the actual game you're playing, because there are several games where the only die you roll is a D20, I like the ability to be able to just roll and then move on into the storyline. So I'd have to say D20.
Awesome. I'm going to take the other end. I'm going to take roll and keep. And my stance for that is it seems like in roll and keep, where in a D20 system, you have a static number that you're adding to your D20, and you have to get over a certain number to accomplish something. In the roll and keep system, there is no static number. There's no, I don't get a 10, or I don't get whatever to add to my number, add to my roll, or my BAB. I don't get that. It's purely based on your die rolling, whether or not you accomplish something or not, and to the degree in which you succeed. So it becomes purely a system based on how well you roll. It adds up to a lot of interesting things, because there's no grace, there's no buffer, there's no I get to add any number to whatever I roll. It's just strictly whatever I roll, and if I didn't hit it, I don't make it, and if I did, to what degree did I succeed? And it just leaves, it's just a wide variety there. So Josh, in your shock and awe of agreeing with Anton this evening, I guess this is the way it's going to be, is convince me that D20 is better.
For me, I think the big thing I look at when it comes to the D20 system is it seems to give you a better idea of how capable your character is. I really don't think that the difference comes down to whether or not it's more in the dice hands or whether or not it's more in your hands, but I think it helps in character development and helps in giving you more of a written down explanation of how good your character is at something. A bard who has phenomenal knowledge in arcana, though they are a bard and most people know them as to be the ones with all the knowledges around, they may not be as proficient in other knowledges. Whereas, you know, if at least maybe it's something I've noticed or whatever, that it seems like with a roll and keep system that it's a little more generalized, but the dice tend to put it, if you roll better, you do better. But roll better, do better is in the D20 system as well. So for me, it really just lays it out and makes it pretty clear to me how strong my character is or what my character is weak at. So if a game master looks at me and goes, I need you to make a sense motive check, and I look down and I'm like, I can't do it. It's going to fail or whatever. And you know that right off the bat. And for me, it can speed the game along. But it also is, you find out right then and there that your character does not read people very well.
Anton?
Well, see, I'm kind of going off the devil's advocate. I prefer the D20 system, but one of the things that, like, I will contradict what Josh was saying is that's one of the things I did like about the roll and keep system was the fact that there's a lot more chance to things. You're not knowing going straight in there that it's going to be pass or fail. You have the chance of surpassing them with your rolls. So that's one of the big things that I do like about the roll and keep system is that there is a lot more chance involved in it that versus D20.
Donald.
I think looking at what Anton said, I would have to say that I feel like there is definitely a degree in the D20 system that can allow you to use an untrained skill, or I'm sorry, not an untrained skill, to use a skill that might be universal for anybody, even though you may have poor numbers in it, you can still succeed widely with, you know, a really good roll. Depending on your, you know, game master, if they run, you know, critical failure, critical success, if you roll a D20, even if you've got a -2 in swim because you wear the wrong kind of armor, you're still going to be able to swim across that 15-foot deep river. I do like what the roll and keep system brings. I've played a couple games that were roll and keep style systems, and I really do enjoy it. I think that it definitely brings a different aspect into the game than what you would have in a D20 system. It allows someone to kind of look upon their character more real life. Because as a lot of us know, you know, in the adventuring world, as a hero in a role-playing game or the like, mostly role-playing game because that's pretty much what we're talking about, in a role-playing game, you know, you might have a bard that has a lot of knowledge in Knowledge Arcana. However, that does not necessarily eliminate the fact that sometime in that character's life, they could have experienced the opportunity to learn about history. They could have experienced the opportunity to learn about engineering and architecture or knowledge, nobility, and royalty. You know, you might know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who can help you out and give you a little bit of insight. And I think that the roll and keep system definitely brings that to the board over what the D20 system does. But I would have to say that really for myself, what I really love about the D20 system is, you know, and especially like there are games like Mutants and Masterminds, which is a superhero role-playing game. And in the second edition, Mutants and Masterminds, it's all D20. You don't use anything other than a 20-sided die. And, you know, to me, I feel like there is a lot of power. I think we made the comment, you know, just in our off time, there is a lot of power with being able to roll 15d6 or, you know, 20d10. But there's so much more value in being able to roll 1d20, get a result, match it with the difficulty class of that roll. If you pass, you pass. If you fail, you fail. But the story keeps moving. And when you're having a roll, you know, 28,000 die, or you're, you know, taking bonus dice out from experience you've gained, or whatever it may be, depending on the system, it can tend to bog the game down just a little bit. So,
well, I think as far as roll and keep, generally what it allows me to do is make the best individual character that I can possibly make. In roll and keep, it is, and this is my observation of the difference between roll and keep and D20, is where roll and keep, it's all about your stats. I mean, if you are have a phenomenal strength or a phenomenal brawn, whichever your stat reads there, all of the dice that then rely on that stat get to keep more dice. So obviously, the higher your traits are, the better you're going to be. And in D&D, or with a D20 system, at least in the ones that I have played, there are very few areas that allow you to actually straight up modify your stats after you've set them, other than magic items and other than the experience or the stat gains you get from leveling. Other than that, your stats stay within a pretty good window. A pretty narrow window, where in a roll and keep system, your stats vary with depending on how much experience you want to put into them. Now, granted, that's a difference in itself, as you have to keep track of XP and stuff like that. But as far as roll and keep is, you get to build the best base character that you can possibly build, and it's not necessarily about that magic weapon. It's not about the magic armor you have. It's not about all this other stuff that you have to make your character a hero. Your character is a hero when he's locked in that dungeon all by himself. Because, I'm sorry, with a brawn of, you know, 9 on a scale of 10, I'm pretty much a monster. Whether I'm in a dungeon, whether I have a sword, whether I'm throwing cars. You see what I'm saying? It's based on building the best character you can build before you get to put all that stuff on top of it. Josh, you had your hand up over there.
Well, I think that also there's an element that I'm seeing more of the game masters we play with adding into functionality that I think we're starting to see maybe a crossover from some of the functions that, for example, 7th Sea was a historical style pirate-like game that we played a couple of times that was a roll-and-keep system. And one of the features / capabilities in the game was the idea of the drama die. You do something to impress the game master, and they give you a drama die, which allows you to add an additional dice at any point in time, or X number of dice, depending on how many drama points you've earned, to your rolls. And I've actually seen a couple of game masters do that, a similar standpoint. Heck, even the Star Wars system, which is a D20 system, the Saga Edition, has a force point system that's similar, that lets you add a D6 to a roll if you so choose. John, again, one of our listeners, has said to us on multiple occasions, well, you explained it well enough, take another +2, take another +4, which is a role-playing element that game masters, I think, I think any game masters that are listening to this, take heed of that. Because I think that is an excellent way of giving your players some credit for their role-playing capabilities. Or lack of. I mean, there are some that will willingly give you a negative because you obviously don't sound like you have any idea what you're talking about. So, don't BS the GM. Try your best to really come out and make things understandable.
Don, what you got?
Kind of touching individually on what both you and Josh said. Based off of what you were saying, I really like kind of how you explained that the roll and keep system allows you to really become an individual character, because there are so many times when we've all played role-playing games where you just feel like you get pigeonholed, like, oh, well, we've got a ranger, we've got a cleric, we've got a paladin. Okay, well, you got to be somebody who can open locks and disarm traps, and you feel pigeonholed. Whereas with something like 7th Sea, where that is a roll and keep system, you do get a little bit more variety with your character, because not only are you choosing what your stats are, but there's just there's just a ton of really cool stuff that you get to add with your character in general. Now, I think that partially that has to do with the game system itself. Which
I agree.
I really love the 7th Sea game system. I really love the way that you're able to just freely be a character and play and play with your environment. But I think that, you know, those things you can obviously add to a D20 system as a DM. But I totally agree that I think that in general there's something lost a lot of times when people create characters in a D20 system that get pigeonholed because they're thinking, okay, well, in order for me to be an effective cleric, I need to make sure I have a really high wisdom. Well, how am I going to have a really high wisdom? Well, I can put an 18 in my wisdom when I roll it, you know, or I can put that many points depending on how you make your character. And then I can just buy a really cool magic item to up my wisdom. You know, and your focus should be more on your character, more on being who you are and investing into your character as a role player, because that's what you are. You are taking on that role as that character. And when all of a sudden your player is just consumed with magic items, you lose part of the integrity of being a role player, because now you're just, you know, now you're just a treasure hunter pretty much that has the ability to heal. And kind of touching on some of the things that Josh said, I feel like it is very cool that there are so many game masters and dungeon masters that will take the opportunity to add a bonus to a player, or, like you said, even take away a bonus to a player based on how they affect their environment. I think drama die, if you can include it in a D20 game, is a lot of fun. It gives your players the opportunity to really focus on that role play, because, like I said just a second ago, it's all about the actual role play of the game. That's why it is called a role playing game. It's not called a combat having game, because, you know, you are there to become that character. You are there. Now, if your character is a combat, you know, oriented person, obviously that is a priority to you. But
about to say, I know a paladin who beat the crap out of a dragon the other day.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it should definitely be in the forefront of your mind to be a role player over, you know, over someone who takes up combat. Now, if you're not a great role player, take the opportunity to, you know, do everything you can. Even if you are just an antagonist to your party, the fact that you take that opportunity to be a role player sometimes can be very fun. You know, you can affect a lot of things in the game, you know, and if your DM is not expecting it, which, you know, most of them are not, at least with us, most of them are not. So it gives you an opportunity to really change up how things are going to go. And so,
yes, Josh,
I'm going to steal a little bit of your job here for a moment. Uh-oh. Mike, because I have a question I'd like to hear everybody else answer. Which system do you think is more readily available, I guess, for messing with the game master? I guess, I mean, at least three of us have game mastered games before, and I know Tony's done it a couple of times as well, so I guess that would be all of us. He's the one that we can define doing the card game with at the campground, which, yep, I'll never forget doing that, because that, you know, that should just solve this confusion right now. But do you think either one is more suited for the role-playing situation, I guess you could say?
Well, I was going to comment after Donald finished up, but since you have rightfully stolen my job, I'll just slide right into yours.
Are you the fence sitter for the episode?
No, I won't do that. There's a certain amount of smiting that I cannot fulfill. In the D20 system, I know you guys have alluded to the speed of the game, and it generally tends to speed everything up because you're rolling one dice and you have this static number you add to it, and then you have a certain number you need to achieve. If you achieve it, you did it. If you didn't, you didn't. And that's pretty cut and dry. The good part about that is it doesn't take an awful lot of time to prepare yourself to do something to throw the wrench in the game plan. Where you can be sitting on the couch, the game master could just say something the right way, and then, bam, I'm throwing a D20, I'm sensed motive on that guy, he's lying, Merry Christmas, now I'm rolling initiative. And it's just really that simple. You throw two dice and you're in combat. Where in my experience with the D20 system, or the roll and keep system, I'm sorry, it is, you have a variety of degrees of doing things. And this is where I think the roll and keep system really shines over the D20 system. If I am in the same situation, same guy's talking to me, and I'm in a roll and keep system, and I believe he's lying, I'm going to roll my perception or whatever your sense motive is based on, and I'm going to get a number. And then I'm going to look at the game master, and I'm going to say, I'm going to attempt to see if this guy is lying to me, and he needs to roll opposed to my perception or whatever that skill is. And she's going to roll, or he is going to roll their dice, and then you're going to compare. Now, in a D20 system, if I beat the guy, I win. If I don't beat the guy, I lose. In a roll and keep system, if I beat the guy, I win. But the degree in which I beat the guy reveals more and more and more and more information. I.e., if I'm a guy that is designed to study people by, you know, watching their appearance and, you know, like the movie Lie to Me. Or the sitcom Lie to Me. If I'm just designed, if that's what I'm made to do, is just watch that guy and to get the information out of him without him even saying anything, then I'm going to be really good at what I do. And when I go to observe you, I should have that advantage to be able to say, I can pick up the fact that, you know, you are, I don't know, you're aggressive towards females just by the way you walked in the room and kind of eyeballed the chick as you walked by. Now, granted, you can kind of do that in the D20 system, but it's just purely based off of succeeding and not succeeding. And it's not a degree as far as, I mean, I know they have degrees set up for knowledges and stuff like that, but it's not a degree in skills as a whole. There's not, you know, oh, I expertly succeeded at opening this lock. Now, yeah, you can roll a natural 20 and do a critical success, which is kind of awesome as it is because your hair is perfect and nothing is ever, you know, you avoid the rain and you run. However, there isn't really any type of degree system. And it also works the same with attacking. If I'm trying to attack this guy and his, you know, target number is 15 and I roll a 35, then I get the most awesome experience of trying to explain to this DM how this guy's target number is 15 and I rolled a 35, how I really just suckered that guy into attacking him. Because that's a huge difference between 15 and 35. And it just opens up the avenue for all this explanation of how I did what and whatnot, which encourages your role play. Now, back to what you were talking about which system really alludes to kind of just messing with the game master, it really is just going to kind of depend. The D20 system, absolutely, for the speed of being able to just yank the carpet out from under him and kind of leave him with his wide eyes and what in the heck just happened to my 12 pages of notes that we just get past. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, D20 all the way. But being able to manipulate your own game master into changing his own plot line without him even knowing, I think your D20, your roll and keep system is a little better at that because you get to kind of milk the system for what it's worth on all areas instead of just doing this quick rug and then his eyes are huge and then he realizes that you've just kind of screwed him over.
One of the things I was saying while you were saying that was one of the things for roll and keep that you can do is you kind of smooth over that edge, and then the DM finally realizes that
there's no return.
Yeah, carpet's been pulled out from underneath them, very slowly and gently.
I think kind of building off of what you guys are both saying, I feel like a lot of what we have learned all individually as DMs is to always be prepared for the party in general, because I can think of a game that we played a few months ago where we had entered into this golden city and we were supposed to go down a road through a town, get the heck beat out of us all the way to the center of this huge golden maze, and instead we cast fly and flew over the entire city and landed right in the middle. So
actually, as I remember it, they spider climbed up across the ceiling.
Yeah, it was spider climb.
And slow shirks.
And slow fell.
And then did feather fall.
Feather fall. That's what it was, yeah. I totally agree that I think that the D20 system, with as rapid as it can be, is definitely more of a more of a player dominated gaming system than a DM gaming system on a lot of levels. Obviously, you know, your DM can say, no, that's not going to happen. I'm sorry, you just accidentally stepped into an anti-magic field and you can't cast, you know, that kind of thing. But that kind of takes a little bit of the love away from your players, and at least the creativity. However, what I have experienced in the roll and keep system is exactly like what Michael is talking about. Being able to not only... You know, if you hit an enemy in the middle of a combat, you do have like some sort of leeway on the degree in which you do damage or things like that. But what I really like about the systems in general, and I know this is a slightly deviating from your question, but what I really like about what the roll and keep system, or at least what the 7th C role playing system, which is I think what we're basing a lot of this on, gives you over sometimes what the Pathfinder Dungeons and Dragons role-playing system gives you, is that freedom of a or as a player to directly affect the event that is going on right now. So if we're all in combat, I can say, well, as I see the damsel walk down the stairs in the arms of this evil guy who has a knife to her throat, I am going to slide in behind Michael's character and roll a hide check and, you know, whatever, hide in the shadows and then wait for my opportunity to jump out and tackle him or whatever. Whereas with the D&D system, it'd be like, all right, I am rolling a D20 to hide behind Michael, and I'm rolling a D20 to hide in the shadows, and then I'm rolling a D20 to stealth all the way to the other side behind the staircase. And now I'm going to hold action until this guy, you know, it's a lot more technical sounding than what perhaps like a system like 7th C would give you. You can be a little bit more descriptive and creative. Not to say you couldn't be descriptive and creative in the D20 system, but with the technical nature of the game, I think that there's a little bit lost with having to kind of explain what you're doing and then roll every time you want to do it.
Josh.
Yeah, you know, right now I feel like, you know, we're all game masters here, but we're all starting to talk like players. So, I think what I'll put in on this is maybe looking at it from a different perspective. As a game master, the D20 system for me is a lot easier to manage, because the majority of the important roles that players are going to have to deal with are either in your game mastery screen or right in the book, as it might be, and it helps you to make your decisions based off what the characters are doing. I don't believe that the role playing is just depending on how well you can explain a story will explain from as a player's perspective will make either system work better. But as a game master, I think it's easier to make your changes when numbers are a little more static. Because if they succeed, great. If they don't. Now, I know that some game masters, similar to what I was discussing earlier, can take the opportunity and take advantage. Now, it's like we're giving tips. Now, take advantage of the situation. If you beat somebody's armor class in a D20 system by 10 or better, give them the option that, okay, maybe you can take 5 off of it or 10 off of it to go for a called shot. As some of the alternate rules go, to make it maybe a little more flair. But if you do beat somebody by that bad, I mean, I've myself as a game master have run a dragon, and if I beat your armor class by 10 or better, I'm not going to change any damage per se, but I'll make it pretty clear that I knocked you down almost. Now, officially with the rule system, I may not have knocked you down, but as a game master, you have the right to go, yeah, I hit you so hard you're on the ground. So,
absolutely. Another thing I wanted to touch on with the roll and keep system versus the D20 system, and you kind of hit it, Don, kind of on the head, where you were talking about the D20 system, and this kind of holds true with a lot of the D20 system that I've even played in, even with as simple as Mutants and Masterminds, when it's just the D20. You tend to use your D20 to describe the rules that you're using to do the things that you're doing. Like, I'm going to hide. I'm rolling this D20 to hide. I'm going to sneak. I'm going to roll this D20 to sneak. And I know there's been some streamline. You know, you have stealth now, which is all one check, which helps that a lot. But in the roll and keep system, the what you describe dictates the target number that you need to hit. So going back to 7C, which is what Don was using, if the damsel is coming down the stairs in the arms of the evil guy, and I see Don's character run up and hide behind Josh's character, knowing that he's going to have the opportunity to catch him unawares, I then, on my character's turn, I can say, you know, as I look around the room, I see this huge chandelier in this far room to the left, and I'm going to draw my pistol, and I'm going to make a commotion in this huge room over on the left, and I'm going to shoot this rope that this chandelier is hanging on and drop the chandelier. Thus, the evil guy is going to turn his attention away from Don, and he's going to be able to have a better chance of essentially getting the damsel. Now, in doing so, I have described my action. Now, behind Josh's DM screen, it does not say drawing a pistol while in court, while damsel coming down the stairs in the arms of the evil guy, you're going to shoot into the other room and hit a rope the size of your wrist and cause you a commotion.
DC 900.
I need you to roll 25,000 D20,
yeah,
and I hope you succeed on all of them. Where in the roll and keep system, you can describe elaborate things that you want to do and then bank on the skill of your character. And now, granted, you can say, the DM can say, okay, yeah, that's kind of rough. I need you to hit a really high target number. Now, the awesome part about the roll and keep system is you have the ability to do that. Like in the 7C system, they have the exploding kind of roll a 10. You get to re-roll the die and keep going. So you have the opportunity to do some crazy, amazingly, almost inhuman things that you can possibly do. But it's all based on how you describe it. If you really want to just be like, you know what, Don's up there hiding behind Josh, and I'm just going to draw my pistol and shoot it in the air, that'll cause the same commotion, and the bad guy is going to be looking at me and not Don. But it sure as heck isn't going to be nearly as fun. And it's not going to have nearly the effect of a chandelier crashing to the ground in the other room. So I guess as we wrap up here, we only have a few minutes here. But as we wrap up, I just want to say that in the roll and keep system, you have the more freedom to choose what you want to do. Where in the D20 system, I have established that you have these rules that you kind of run by. And that's what you do. And the bad part is you still have the freedom to describe everything you want in the D20 system. But I think a lot of players forget that and just fall on the side of, I'm going to sneak, I'm going to roll the die and make it happen. I'm going to hide, I'm going to roll the die and make it happen. And it in itself kind of robs the role-playing atmosphere. And just like they said, this is a role-playing game, not a let's get into initiative and fight everybody. Josh, why don't you close this up?
You know, I've found out just by talking with Tracy Hickman. Actually, is a well known fantasy author. He even has his own game system out called the Extreme Dungeon Mastery that really tries to focus on role playing and so forth. And one of the things he said about that, you know, he's tried to keep it as limited down to that one dice thing and doing things like that. And he tries to focus on the characters being as heroic as possible and not being afraid to die, no matter what that may be. But as he does in, he does this thing at Gen Con called the Killer Breakfast. The number one thing that you do as soon as you sit down is you explain how you got there. And then the number two thing you do before you die is explain what you're doing. So I think the most important thing, no matter what the game system may be, is be ready to look your game master in the face and explain exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, I think just kind of touching on that real quick, just as we kind of get out of here, I definitely think that there's an avenue in which you can be creative. And if that means that you are completely honest with your roles and you write down all of your roll results in the progression of what you want to do with your character, and then you hand those results to your DM, and then you do that description and say, I'm going to roll behind this guy and hide, and then I'm going to kind of swing around so that I'm still in the shadows and get behind the bad guy, and then Mike's character is going to shoot the chandelier from the other room. All of those obviously will take roles in the D20 system, but there's no reason why you can't, if you're an honest player, there's no reason why you can't do that, have that kind of creativity, and play that way with your DM and be allowed to do so, you know, because that's what those roles are there for. So
as we wrap up episode 6, I want to leave you with this fact that we have established. It's one dice, two dice, red dice, blue dice.
Oh my gosh.